Checking in once again with State Representative Tacky Chan of Quincy during this heat wave, Tacky.
Hey, good to see you, Joe. It's around noon time, so about another hour or so from high heat. It's generally about closer to 2 p.m. People don't realize when it's the hottest because of this radiant heat. It heats up the surface. It takes time for it to bubble up. Although, my Google is telling me it's 101 by my house in Wollaston. So I suspect anything, close to 100's plenty.
Well, the record is 104 in Boston back in 1911. So we'll see.
Well, the unit was once around around 1911, and I'm thankful we have inside air conditioning. I could not imagine what it's like in 1911.
Yes, actually, I did a little reading and it was horrendous. I mean, people died. People were jumping out of tenement windows because it was so hot in those brick buildings in Boston. It was serious for sure.
Oh my! And they probably had tar, some kind of tar substance on the roofs, so the tar would start to melt, and then you're basically sitting inside a brick oven.
Correct. Yes. So it's no joke, really. I mean, we're very fortunate today to have air conditioning and relief.
Yeah, I'm sure that you've already put out some heat warning advisories through QATV. Mass Emergency Management has already put out advisories. The electric companies have put out advisories. Electric usage is obviously very, very high right now. Even though you may be working from home, you do are using more electricity, even though you may be working from home. And the big office complexes at least have to maintain minimum cooling if there's nobody in there. They can't let it get to like 100 degrees in those buildings.
No,
It's too
right.
ridiculous.
Yeah. Too much
So,
equipment at stake and takes too long to cool it down once people come back.
yeah. And, we always like to remind folks we should appreciate people that do not have an option but to work in the heat. Construction workers, people who do landscaping, home construction folks, people that do the roads and sewers and water, the utility workers, which probably could be very busy depending on how much heat the system can take.
Well, funny you bring that up. There's a water main break on Chubbuck Street in Quincy Point right now.
I mean, DPW, very thankful for their work despite whatever condition the weather, it has to put a lid on the break and try to find a way to get people some consistent water while they try to address the bigger issue. I mean,
Yeah.
a lot of folks out there, people forget, and I do appreciate and hope you all appreciate that regardless of the weather situation, they're out working. They still need to work. I mean, your grocery store still need to get filled. People have stuff to truck that stuff in. People have to load and unload those trucks. It isn't like they're doing it in the air conditioning.
That's right. Our letter carriers, don't forget our letter carriers.
Yep, our letter carriers are doing this. And of course, people still maintain the MBTA. Not everyone is on the train. And, some people are going to be very uncomfortable in the underground platforms in particular because it's stuffy. But I mean, you also have people there that work all the time, not just waiting for a train, but you got MBTA workers are physically in there, in those tunnels. So
Yes.
yeah, it's a good reminder to should be appreciative of a lot of folks that are out in this weather, keeping I hate to use the adage, but I mean, so-called keeping the trains running on time, right? Our essential services are still in work. I mean, it's still garbage day.
That too, exactly. Yeah, the good news is the water quality at Wollaston Beach so far is A-okay for swimming.
Yeah, we got a notice last week about that. It seems like the water testing is okay. One of the funny things about this beach, actually all the beaches here, revolves around the flushing of our drainage system. So a lot of our bacterial stuff sits in our drainage system, and of course, we encourage people not to put your dog waste in there for pollutes the beach, and any other chemicals into the drainage system it pollutes the beach. But when there's a heavy rainstorm, it pushes all that material that is organic, that decomposes normally, into the bay. And then you have to wait for the bay to flush it out. So it's given the fact it's been kind of like a lot of rain, no rain, a lot of rain, no rain. It's given a chance for the bay to flush.
Right, exactly. Yeah. And of course, your library is a great place to cool off. The Kennedy Center as well. A lot of public buildings that are open.
Yeah, well, the State House has a lot of people just mingling around because And it is a public building. As long as you can't pass security, no one's going to get you out of there until closing time. So it's unusual for people in the state house just to hang out and use the public library. We have a library at the state house. Obviously, you have hearings if people want to sit in a hearing and stay cool, but also just hang in the hallways. It's I remind folks that state house is a functional legislature. It is a functional office building. It is a functional museum because of the nature of the building itself. But also is a public building. Once you get past security, you can hang around to closing time.
Is the Hall of Flags open to the public upstairs, Jackie?
It is, unless it's being occupied by an event.
Okay. Yeah,
So,
that's a neat place. I'd recommend folks check that out. It's really cool.
absolutely. And the Memorial Hall is always my favorite hall. That is, recognizing the sacrifices of our veterans and their families. Is what Memorial Hall is for. And it's actually the only hall that's not used for public events, and
I see.
it's always my favorite hall. I mean, the stained glass, the portraits, the images of the flags that have flown out of Massachusetts, various battalions and infantry and so forth. So, yeah, I encourage people that if you're looking for a no cost entertainment, just go to Parkview Station and come uphill to the State House. I believe tours start at 9:45 in the morning, and the last tour I believe is at 3:30, I
Oh,
believe.
okay.
It's about 45 minutes to an hour, depending on group size. You may have to share a group of other people, which I don't think is going to be a problem with anybody. And if you have like a big group, you definitely should go to tour desk to get an RSVP, or give my office a call, and we can try to help you set up with a tour desk through us, and we'll connect you to them if you got a big group coming in.
Okay, and who gives the tours? Is it the park rangers or?
Secretary of State's office run the tourist desk.
Oh, okay.
You actually have a lot of summer interns that are trained in the tour. I've actually done tours myself because back in my younger days, I had to keep the kids entertained when waiting for Michael Morrissey to show up. It was perpetually late when he worked in the Senate, so kind of entertained the school kids long enough for me to get there. So I've done my share of tours, even though I was never part of the tour desk, part of the jobs of legislative staff. And the hidden jobs of legislative staff you never knew about.
That's right.
That's
Very good.
a big part of the gig. But yeah, also the library is part of a library. A library has a lot of a discount and free services for families. Highland Street has put up the calendar for one facility to open in the Greater Boston area for free. So Highland, I think it's highland.org. I'm trying to remember the website. I'll send that over to you.
Okay.
We have that calendar. Obviously the MDC parks and the passive parks, as well as the pools, will be opening up, should be opened up, and other cooling stations through the summer. And of course, we have Walson Beach itself, which is very popular. And as we know, people get out of the city areas to go to the water, not just here, but all the way down to Nantasket. So, it is a public beach. People kind of think it belongs to them, but it's open to everyone.
Absolutely. Speaking of the State House, anything to talk about legislatively?
We're going to have a rules debate finally on Thursday. So after months and months and months of a conference committee regarding the internal operation of the committee structure, we have some joint rules, which eerily looks very similar to what we're already doing now on how to run hearings. There are some new things going on. One is they do a little more detailed management of how committees run. Historically, it's, for lack of a better term, it's been the gentleman's agreement. I mean, we always have written rules in some form, but as long as the two chair between the House chair and Senate chair get along, I've always operated a gentleman's agreement. And it's worked well for me for many years, but now it's a little bit more formalized on, close together equal hearings. Notification times have shifted up to 10 days from 72 hours. These aren't dramatic changes. IRA had already been doing 7 to 10 days or more notification of public hearings. And there's some various provisions regarding posting votes online. Testimony has always been available to the public. You just had to call the committee and ask for it. Because it can be verbose, but there's some stuff is personal. People don't realize. People do send me things like the social security numbers and medical document information sometimes, depending on what they're testifying on. because they feel it's relevant. I'm not giving you that. I don't think you want it anyway.
Right.
But obviously, information, particularly from industries, that testimony is available to the public regardless. Just call it and we'll send it over to you. Everything's in a PDF format that we can just email out. If it's a form email, like a form letter, we generally give you one copy of the form letter. You don't need to read like literally the 700 pieces of email I got, which are all 100% identical. You don't need to read them all. You just need to read one if you're looking for testimony. We can provide you all of them, but do you really need to read all of them? What's the point, right? So, they're not what I call dramatic changes. The big change is that we're operating under this House rule system, and the Senate rule system, where we're basically, intents and purposes, bifurcating bills for exit. So normally, it used to be under joint committees, the House and Senate chairs decide movement of bills, and then we would attach, for lack of a better term, all relevant topics of the same bill as a redraft and ship it to one branch or the other. We divvy up the work that way. You take this one, I'll take this one. We got this politics, you got that politics, you got this member, I got that member. We always kind of work it out. Now the bills on each branch goes to each branch. And it's a conceivable situation where the Senate chair moves a bill favorable and the identical House bill will be given unfavorable.
Okay.
In the past, the House and Senate chair come to an agreement over favorable or unfavorable.
So this kind of prolongs the process then, right?
This will cause some degree of conflict in process because what
Yeah.
happens is you have two branches from the committee chair standpoint sending messages from the committee. That's
Right.
technically a joint committee. You can see my. If you've been doing this long enough, you understand the problems here
Yeah, no,
regarding.
I can see the problem, yeah.
And I've been to, I operated in these rules when I first got here in 95, as an intern and a staffer under the 94 rule structure that was approved. So it just means as a chair, we have to just change how I operate. And it's going to be a bit of hiccuping, which we've experienced already going along. Not just on operation public hearings, choosing the bills to be heard, then it's deciding how to move bills out. And 60-day rule, 90-day rule, plus this weird extension on top of that to the end of the Joint Rule 10, which is going to be the first Wednesday in December now. They push the Joint Rule 10 into the first half of the 2-year session, which in some ways is actually not bad for me because I never liked it was actually in the second year because it pushes me into the holiday season, trying to deal with hearings and getting bills out of committee, forcing me to get this done right after Thanksgiving takes a lot of pressure off. And then I can, dispense with late file bills that are not filed timely, late file bills, which I have 60 days to figure out to have a hearing and figure out what I'm going to do with as well. So this committee is actually not like other committees because we'll still pick up upwards of like 20 plus bills after the filing deadline was done in January. So this is a year-round committee, and most people, even in state house, don't realize that, this committee never sleeps in a conventional manner. Some other committees, when they're done with their subject matters, they will get no more new bills.
Right. Yeah, the committee's not needed any longer, right?
Well, they become basically advocates for bills that go into Ways and Means,
I
right?
see. Okay.
They don't actually have many more hearings. In my world, because in these the broad terms of consumer protection professional licensure, those very broad words, creates the clerk to be able to just ship a lot of stuff out to us. Say we get the random stuff that doesn't fit in other committees.
You're the go-to.
We are, strangely indeed, it's why I like the committee. It keeps me very, very stimulated when I'm dealing everything from alcohol licensing or alcohol manufacturing, down to whether or not we should create new types of licensing under various therapists and interstate combat,
Yeah.
interstate acts. So, there's different kind of people who want to do therapist licenses or people who are trying to add language access to certain licenses, exams, such as cosmetology, hoisting, just add a linguistic, a more linguistic options to things like dealing with the racetrack and the lottery system. We're now watching iLottery. You see how that rolls out. I got a whole bill regarding internet gambling, whether I'm going to expand that. THC drinks, even though it was addressed in the cannabis bill, technically I have those bills in committee as well, allowing the ABCC to have limited oversight on transportation of which, but leaving the majority regulation with the Cannabis Control Commission that's now in the House proposal being reformed, waiting for action in the Senate.
Yes, yeah.
So that's just a teeny, teeny handful of examples of the volume I deal with in terms of subject matter. And I like it. I talk about it with you every so often. And every time I chat, it's always something that's very different from last week.
Yeah, keeps you stimulated, like you say, and you never really know what's coming down the pike.
No, and we should have a vote this Thursday in both the House and Senate that will finalize the rules. And then, have a chat with the Speaker's office about what the thought about movement is, like, how quickly would you like stuff come out? I think we're up to 40 plus bills ready to move. So the staff has already been redrafting bills that have been heard, have been reviewing the redrafts, and then we'll take action. We're already running late, in my personal opinion, because I like to get things done quicker in my calendar. But also some advantages. This is my 10th year, ninth year. It's my fifth term chairing the same committee. As you know, I staffed this committee when I worked in the state Senate, plus also was a committee member throughout almost my entire time in the House as well. So there's not a lot of people that has well into almost 30, well, not 30, it's more like 28 years of hand-on experience in this matter.
Institutional knowledge is what we call it, yes.
Well, there's also not a lot of legislators that actually does have hand-on experience in how to run committee as a committee staffer. There
Right.
aren't many of us actually that are elected that actually, was the one writing the summaries, doing notices, making the photocopies, bringing material to committee members, talking to committee members, answering questions to the public, providing documents for people to the public, managing the hearing schedules, managing, time, working with the House membership because I was in the state Senate. Working with House committee staff who are coordinating work, negotiating with the House committee staff on what bills we, our bosses want to move forward or not, and how to set up the negotiations between two bosses. And the longer we did it, the Senate House chairs had greater faith in the staff, which allowed us to have more flexibility in how we discuss matters and what issues we had to bump up to the chairs because it was beyond our purview to make those decisions. So, it not a lot of people have literally that much hands-on experience. And, like I said, could things always run better? Sure. But, I'm not making those leaders' decisions because that's, in the leadership structure with the Speaker, the Senate President, and the leaders, all the people with leader titles, as they say, up in the third floor. So I just work in the system, people. It isn't like I make the system.
Yes,
But,
being a teacher, legislative teacher.
or I'd rather have rules than no rules. I'm glad we're voting on some rules. I would sort it out as I go along with the staff on
Yeah.
how to process. And then my co-chair is on his second term as in a very complicated committee with not a lot of experience of how rules work. So you got that factor to consider as well. But I
Yeah.
mean, it is almost July and I got to get moving these bills.
Let's get the show on the road, people.
I got a hearing every 2 weeks, except for August, right up to basically early November. So,
True.
yeah, you say, oh, it's every 2 weeks. Well, it's every 2 weeks, but it's like a week and a half of preparation. Then we have to agree on what bills can be heard. Then I got to deal with setting it up. And then once we get the hearing list sign-up sheets done, because they have to be advanced sign-up because of online testimony by the Friday before the Monday of the hearing, I have to review the sign-up sheets. I'm going to manage this hearing as efficiently, as quickly as possible, where everybody gets their say, but keep from dragging too long. And no one likes to be cut off. However, if you start to repeat yourself, or I can see how much paper you're in front of. I'm seeing like 5 pages you're reading. We're not doing that.
Right. Let's change topics and talk about international conflict. Since last we chatted, I was curious. The governor made a statement after the attack on Iran, saying that there were no credible threats to Massachusetts. So she said she was, I guess she was notified by the Secretary of Defense about that.
Well, it's a soft target question, right? I mean,
Yeah.
if unless you weren't aware of it, I mean, the Israel-Iran conflict war, you can call it whatever you want, of basically tossing missiles at each other. Because, if you look at a map, a land war ain't going to happen. You have to cross to Iraq and a whole lot of desert. So This is basically air warfare, and the Israelis basically continue what they did back last October, which is basically eliminate their anti-aircraft systems and target and destroyed many launchers in Iran. Not many, but not all, as you see in the news. The U.S. responded regarding a nuclear facility issue by dropping an untested bunker bombing thing, which you saw in the news as well, which, if you look at satellite photos, was incredibly precise weapons dropped to 30,000 feet. So, yeah, they work as advertised. Now, whether or not they destroyed the facilities is up for some debate because analysts are giving conflicting information. But there's a, you know, it's just analyst speculation too. There's more hard data regarding
Right. Iran's not going to tell you.
Between satellite imaging and, you know, intelligence agencies and radiation experts and whether the UN's allowed to look. That's a good question. But I also remind folks, people tend to how short our memories are. You know, the Iran deal was actually nixed by President Trump in his first term, like first thing he did in 2016. So I'm actually 17. As a result, you know, Iran had no reason to hold up its end of the bargain regarding uranium enrichment.
Right, and it didn't.
And it didn't, because 60% enrichment is sufficient to, you know, be a threat to it. And people are like, oh, you didn't have to bomb Iran or this stuff. Let's back up a second. The people of Iran are fine. The government is a problem. The government official position is the destruction of the United States and Israel. That is their official position. That
In
is their,
writing, yes.
yeah, it's in writing. That is their objective. I mean, let's not forget that part. People are, I've been watching some commentaries about this. I'm like, and people just don't get it. I mean, people, they don't get to choose the government. The people kind of very innocent bystanders in many ways. They don't get to pick their government. It's a dictatorship since the 70s. And the Shah was terrible. Don't get me wrong. I mean, they got rid of a bad guy, but then replaced it by a person whose entire mission, the government's mission, is to destroy the United States and the Western world, but, you know, United States and Iran and Israel. And that's Iran's entire purpose. They live for one reason, and their entire system's designed around it. The economy is terrible there. The overly oil dependent on one product, almost no exports. It's a real, you know, economically charged country by design, by their government. So let's not make no bones about that. And a as you may or may not be aware, if anyone has a nuclear weapon, North Korea, it changes the entire geopolitical dynamic in a geographic zone. Sure, I mean, they're never going to be able to get a cruise missile to shoot us in the United States, but it changes the conversation about everyone around them. It creates a better extortion opportunity for their neighbors. So the other states in the Arab areas in the Middle East, you know, isn't exactly friendly to Iran either, because it's not like they haven't been targeted.
Right.
And in case you're wondering, Iran, you know, basically held up the Assad regime, used Western Syria as a staging ground for terrorists, funded Hezbollah, funded Hamas, funded the Houthis, and funds the Sunni terrorists or rebellion wing in Iraq, as well as countless other terrorist groups around the world. So this is a government that is their objective. People seem to have forgotten that around here. I've been watching the coverage on this issue. So, you know, if the reports, and I believe they're probably true, 6% enrichment, you know, creates an opportunity where they're going to destabilize the region literally by extorting their neighbors. Because that's what North Korea does on a regular basis. North Korea's MO, although the current Kim is a little bit perplexing, but historically the proposal was, we're going to line up our artillery before they had a nuke. We're going to, because hitting Seoul is, you know, it's not hard to hit Seoul. We're talking about like 10, 20, 10, 20 miles here. It's not like it's hard to hit that city. And start threatening to blow things up and then get oil, rice, other types of essential things they need for their people. It basically extorts the Western world for goods and services. So, you know, that snare will also arise in Iran. You know, it's not necessarily just bad for the US and Israel, but it's actually bad for its surrounding neighbors. And its biggest supporter has been Russia and China, but Russia in particular. And Russia is the place Iran buys the weapons from. And Russia has a little bit of a problem right now regarding selling weapons because they really can't.
Well, they have this own little war they're going on with themselves, yeah.
Yeah, because, you know, this is really kind of a longer analyst by someone better than me, you know, in the intelligence analyst world, but I kind of point to the entire scenario back to the Ukraine war. I mean, if there was no war in Ukraine, Russia is kind of like, has the ear of Iran, and given that their biggest supply dealer of weapons. So the Ukraine war really changed the geopolitical situation in the Middle East. They were backing the Assad regime with Iran. Russia's basically withdrawal and the elimination of that mercenary group, the Wagner group, which is now extending Russian military,
Right.
which is also all over Africa, trying to keep up dictator nations, has really destabilized a lot of the Russian influences in areas through a, through a third party to which they can claim deniability, which they can't anymore. So, I mean, people are like, oh, well, when does this really start? I'm like, you have to look back to the invasion of Ukraine. Russia's removal in global politics in terms of supporting its terrorist allies, and as well as ability to move weapons around the world, still severely destabilized, like the Syrian regime, the Iranis, all those dictators in Africa. It's a huge ripple effect.
Yeah, and it brings a question up too. So where does that leave China?
Well, the Chinese historically, their foreign policy is non-interference. Not like they don't interfere, but it's very rare that the Chinese actually engage in military conflict outside of their immediate borders. You may be aware that border disputes with India a lot. They've had border disputes with Russia a lot. Not unusual to have friendly fire, small skirmishes that try to prevent bigger conflict from happening. For
Hmm.
example, in the India-China conflict, they're not allowed to have weapons. They
Oh,
tend,
really?
yeah, where there's a conflict, they actually will bludgeon them each other with basic clubs. Yeah, it's a whole thing. If you start shooting people, it becomes like an escalation. However, you beat people to death with a club is a different issue. I just don't.
Interesting. Yeah.
It's a real thing. You can look it up. It's real. It's
Okay.
just this way of them trying to keep with the escalation through a border dispute. But I mean, even like the Kashmir incident, China actually has it. If you don't know, there was a terrorist attack in Kashmir. A lot of Indians, as well as some foreigners, were killed. They were tourists. Kashmir is really divided by three areas, which is a Chinese-controlled area, which is small, Pakistan and India. Kashmir is important because of water supply. Two of the biggest rivers flow out of there as water supply, which at Kashmir has a lot of value. It's also a predominantly Muslim. And current Prime Minister Modi has some anti-Muslim or not favorable Muslim mentalities or other certain ethnic groups. It's a longer conversation about kind of attitude about other non. It's a thing. Just leave it at that. It's too complicated to explain in too few words. So, but I mean, yeah, it's China historically does not move outside its zone, and then they do negotiate and be intermediaries, but it's not their expertise. They don't do a lot of it. As a result, they're not really expertise in mediation. And they're not in a conflict zone normally. So not surprising, Middle Eastern nations actually are pretty experienced mediators because they have a lot of conflicts in the area. So various countries have basic professional mediators. The US have historically had mediation ability because we have the biggest guns, and also we are always all over the planet. So we're stuck mediating a lot of different diplomatic problems. China historically does not. It stays within its, immediate sphere of influence and rarely leaves it. And we know China is a backer of Iran. Continue, they like to have a presence in the region, but it was not lost on everybody that the so-called friends of Iran didn't show up when this started.
Yeah, then you know who your friends are.
That is very clear in the case that they are a truly isolated country. Even the North Koreans can lean on the Chinese and Russians, although because of the coziness between Putin and Kim, it gives the Chinese pause because that's inside their sphere of influence. So, the Chinese would like to keep Kim from getting too weird because a nuke goes off in North Korea. Obviously the closest neighbor is China, where
Right.
populated areas would be adversely affected.
Yeah.
So they like to keep him under some wraps from getting too crazy. And if something bad happens, China would be responsible for dealing with it, so to speak. How they deal with it is your guess. as good as mine. I ran out of the hand. If you look at the map, it's middle of nowhere. I mean, it's hard to get to. You can't do a land war properly in Iran. It's just a lot of mountains and desert. Getting there is just really difficult. So, what's the strategic value to Russia and China? Destabilize the region. Beyond that, it doesn't have a whole lot of strategic value. And China's biggest interest in Iran is simple, it's oil.
And that brings up the Strait of Hormuz, which is a critical choke point for oil distribution.
Yeah, about 20% plus of all oil comes through one area, and that's the Strait of Hormuz. And if the strait's closed down, except for, the Iranians letting the owner oil, well, there'll be embargo by the US. They won't let any ship out. The fifth fleet sitting there right now, and let's say Iran decides to cut off everyone else but just them, and they can get out. That doesn't happen.
Then things start to escalate.
Yeah, the goal of the Iranian regime is to stay in power. They're not that dumb. So everything they're doing from here on in is to ensure that they don't get killed, because as you saw, Israeli intelligence and likely US intelligence is really, really good, where they basically lopped off the entire military hierarchy in Iran, including tier two, which forced the regime to put in tier three, for lack of a better term. And they also knocked off a lot of Iranian nuclear scientists. So they're very aware over there that, regime change can happen, one cruise missile, one sniper shot away. They're not immune to being attacked, as we all saw, despite the fact a land war is very impractical.
Oh boy, stay tuned for that for sure.
Well, I was kind of fighting to Cambodia and Thailand right now. There's a border dispute because of, I'm not sure it was accidental or deliberate, but there was a killing of a border soldier in Thailand, I believe. So you got a border dispute going there. The Myanmar civil war is entering year four, I think, which is causing some chaos still. A lot of refugees are fleeing the neighboring countries still. And whether the rebel groups are going to make more headway this year, we don't know. We obviously know about Ukraine. There's a lot of stuff going on in the planet that isn't close to home at all, people don't realize can have, they're not direct effect in the US, but can affect things like, for example, travel. If you want to travel to Cambodia, it turns into a warm war, a warmer war, a warmer dispute between Thailand and Cambodia. Obviously, travel alerts go up and may arrange, derail your travel plans or your business plans, as the case may be. So Taiwan's still a big deal. It can affect people's investments. Like 60% of all shipping comes through the Strait of Taiwan. The Chinese government controls the state of Taiwan. They can charge shipping fees. Through, right? So, China Sea dispute with the Philippines continue with non-weapons. Again, if no guns are fired, there's no technically a hot situation. But water cannons and the Philippine Coast Guard with the water cannons at the Chinese naval ships are playing interference again to protect their water sovereignty. Again, things we don't have to worry about in the US. So, I mean, there's still a lot of stuff happening everywhere. It's just that it doesn't affect you at home right now.
Closer to home, something that may impact us. The Fed is meeting tomorrow, I think, to talk about interest rates.
Well, actually, before Congress right now. So, Jerome Powell's be informed. I don't know what the committee is. I don't know what my congressional committee meetings were. I think it's one of the financial committees. So every 2 times a year for 2 days, he's in the House, then in the Senate, talking about interest rates and an update where on the Fed, and then he takes questioning from senators and congressmen. Depending on what state you're from, determines the questioning. Big surprise. Your state that's affected by interest rates, it's going to be really hostile. States that aren't, they're going to be very friendly. People like to showboat, especially election cycles. Let's not pretend this is not politics, people. People like to showboat, especially when up for re-election soon. So let's not sit here and pretend it's not going on. But the Federal Reserve is always in a bad spot. We've talked to this before. It's always backward-looking data. Interest rates are debatable if they're going to go down on the short side. Long-term interest rates, like anything past, 10 years above, really have no control over. But the short rate has no impact on that. The short-term rates impact banks borrowing money from the Fed Reserve, which then affects people's ability to borrow money from the banks. The long-term rates are traded, and when you sell bonds in the trading market, you increase the value of them because you're buying a bond less valued than the person bought it at, and then you get the interest benefit. So when there's instability, hedge funds, big corporations, and banks will buy long-term bonds, and then the rate will go down. If they are fearful of the U.S. debt load and no confidence in the U.S. government, they'll sell their bonds, which cause long-term rates to go up. So you're buying a home in 20, 30 years, you're looking at 7%. Yeah, the Federal Reserve has some say on that, but the reality that's driven by the faith in the U.S. government stability.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
The higher the rate, the less faith investors have regarding of the government's progress in terms of stability and economic policy. So I think people have kind of oversimplified the Federal Reserve's role regarding the rates. Anything under 2 years, that has a lot of influence on. Beyond that, it's really up to the bond market that buys and sell bonds. Will interest rates get lower? I can't tell you. Do I think inflation's going to slow down anymore? I don't know. Again, a lot of the impacts regarding tariffs and everything else, it's backward-looking data, which I think you have to wait to the months of August, September to see what it is and how much cost will or not be passed to consumers. I just saw a report regarding Costco looking to increase tomato prices. A lot of different factors between weather, supply chain, but also tariffs from Mexico, and tomatoes are coming to season down there. So Canadian stuff was earlier. You already saw the price increase already. I saw the grocery store. Pretty obvious to me. I looked at the prices like, yep, it's already in here.
Oh
No.
yeah, that's baked in for sure. There's no question about that for sure. And subsequently they did the same to our products.
Yeah, no. Whether I don't know how much attention people pay, because we all know groceries are up, but the really individual items and see where they come from. You remember what you're paying for that product before. It's a regular product. My friend who buys Quaker oatmeals on the phone with him is like, "What's the price today?" He's like, "Here it is." And he's like, "Oh, that's $1 more than it was a month ago."
That's
Yeah.
right. Yeah. Not 10 cents more, $1 more. Yeah.
Yeah. And he's a regular consumer of Quaker oats, so he knows the price structure. So if you go to the grocery store and you kind of question where inflation is, if it's a regular product you buy, if it has a foreign product production, you can try to remember the price it was a month or 2 months ago. You do know.
For sure. Yeah. Let's see what happens. I think in the short term, they're going to hold steady, I think, this week.
They hold steady. I don't think you're going to need anything until the fall time to see how things play out. Unemployment is still strong, and like I said, you have this weird problem where, there's an increase in job openings, but there's no increase in unemployment.
Oh,
So,
that's the immigration issue is impacting
yeah. So, it's like I say, I've been warning folks that the Supreme Court has not just allowed this week to allow Trump administration to deport undocumented to any country of the administration's choosing, which I find bizarro in so many ways too. But also, they can deport temporary visa holders, and a lot of temporary visa holders do have jobs. I can tell you right now, I've got at least one phone call from a local retailer who is a temporary visa holder with a job. They would like to make that individual one step closer to a green card holder because of a labor shortage. And the person's great employee, and I was on the phone with the owner of the retail store, and they're like, "What do we have to do?" Well, obviously, talk to the Congress. It's outside my purview. Point them straight up. Immigration policy is changing quickly, and temporary visa holders is on their deport list. Why do I say that? They're legally here. They have temporary visas, good for 2 years. They're not undocumented. But he's going to just under the guise of safety and terrorism, pick certain racial slash countries as dangerous, and they just label them all as dangerous, and then deport these folks, and you're going to see it. And we talked about this earlier this month. Cape Cod lives on temporary foreign workers during the summer months. So if you buy a cup of coffee and it's, 50% more, it's because they're short in labor and have to pay top dollar. And now you know where that cost is coming from. Same thing in the Berkshires. They use a lot of temporary workers that are foreign imported. So we'll see how it plays out. But no, it is not just undocumented. He is already, deporting people who are legally here by revoking their visas. He saw the students, but there's a lot of temporary visa holders with work permits here that won't show up in unemployment numbers.
Right. Yeah, exactly. So that'll flesh itself out over the next couple of months for sure.
Yeah, it will be more apparent over time. I mean, people, always ex watch the news and expect dramatic things happen like now. More times than not, you don't really notice it for months, and then it kind of creeps up on you. And then whether you remember the news story from like 4 months ago that pretty much announced this was going to happen, I can't tell you. But I don't remember everything, but I do kind of connect some dots, as you can tell, listening to me over the many months now, trying to connect the dots back to something which I recall or read about that I was seeing it, months later.
Yeah, absolutely. So you'll be able to get budget discussions back underway once the rules are set, right?
Well, actually, budget discussions already started in the conference committee regardless of the rule situation. So we've been able to run conference committee to move some supplemental budget items to pay for bills. Obviously, last week we moved the surplus money from the millionaire's tax, which don't expect that a second time, people, all these one-time situations. But we should hopefully have a budget. I'm not going to pretend we're going to be on time, folks. I'm not going to say that. I'm not delusional. But I mean, we should have something reasonable within the first 2 or 3 weeks, probably 2 weeks after the start of fiscal year on July 1st. I am going to also tell you that under the Senate proposal on so-called big budget tax bill, I love how you have tax cuts and you spend more money. Love the federal government that can do that. They're actually going to try to get rid of the SNAP program. So if you are in SNAP program, they want to shift the entire cost of the SNAP program to the states. And your SNAP program may be very small benefit. For example, maybe you're getting like $15 or $24 a week. Other people get a few hundred dollars a week, depending on income guidelines. It's very broad. But I mean, even a $10 or $15 a week could make a big difference buying groceries for everyone, especially. So the Senate parliamentarian has rejected that proposal for now to cost shift that cost shift that program to the states. If Congress does do that, and it seems like they do want to do it, and they'll find a way to eventually try to do it, the state budget is going to get blown out of whack if we try to continue a federally funded program.
How much would that cost, Jackie?
I think it's close to 2 billion.
2 billion. Wow. Okay.
Yeah, I got to look at the numbers because I was looking at the other night. It's like there's like a there's a, there's in, it's in more than one place in the budget.
Okay.
So I saw like 60 million, then I saw like 600 million. I'm like, okay, this is one of those add up situations where you have to
I
go
see.
like nine different places to
Yeah.
see what
Yeah.
the program is, because the program isn't just one program, it's one program that has multiple components.
Okay. All right. But just to be clear for folks, this is separate from the state free meals at schools program.
That is separate.
Okay.
This is a 100% federal funded program, which the federal government wants us to pay for, not and force us to pay for, so they
Right.
can look for saving money.
Yep. Gotcha.
And this is the worst type of governing, where you're going to cost shift onto the states. And we are actually more financially sound in many other places, but if you're a state that's very low income, particularly the southern states and some of the Midwest states, this could have a huge, huge impact on them, which are much more dependent on federal assistance. Your federal tax dollars basically subsidize those poor states which have no income tax. Big surprise.
Right,
Income
yeah.
tax means no government services, not complicated. So there'll be more of this coming. I mean, you already heard about all about this Medicaid cost shift, which could cost us well past $2 billion from the state level if we try to maintain the program. But if they go after SNAP, it's going to have another devastating effect on our baseline budget to make really hard decisions on whether or not we can support a federal program with no funding, or do we end up having to spend spend less on something else.
Right, exactly. Or I mean, you can tap the rainy day fund, I suppose, but that's just temporary.
That's correct. We have a knee band on the rainy day fund. There's one just one big band-aid. And the rainy day fund is partially funded by capital gains tax. Given the craziness of the stock market, and even though home sales are continuing and home prices are high here, we have very little stock, which means capital gains on property sales is dependent on high valuation, not volume.
Right. Yeah, exactly. That's why they're trying to build more housing all the time, but there's a huge deficit. I think I read something like 200,000 deficit of housing units in the state.
Yeah, that sounds about right. The vacancy last summer, I was told, it was 0.6%.
Okay.
So that's a rotation rate, 0.6% of available homes. So it's a again, that's a whole podcast in itself. People, it's just more complicated than just building homes. It's a
Well,
whole.
yeah, people really aren't moving. They're pretty kind of staying put. Yeah.
Yeah, I was speaking to the South Shore Realtors last week. It was one of the many events I was doing. As you can tell, my voice a little bit harsh again, still kind of overextended myself again. This whole month, I've ex overextended. But I told him there's two factors going on here regarding housing. One, right, we want affordability, and to find a way to create affordability, but also not just that, but also to build, not just affordability. The flip side, though, I mean, people like my mother, is trying to stay in the home, and our loved ones are living longer. And they want to live longer and are more comfortable in the home they're in, particularly if they have health issues, because home-based community care is always better than being in hospitalization, hospice, or nursing homes. So they have folks living longer, staying in their homes, and that also contributes to the housing shortage. And also, if you are older and you have a home of some value, even if you sell your home, where are you going to go?
Exactly. You'd have to really leave this entire region and go someplace more affordable.
Yeah, and some folks, people with means, keep their home here, but also have a second home somewhere else, which I discovered during COVID. Apparently, I was one of the few people who did not have a summer home somewhere. And it felt like that anyway when I was talking to people. I was like, y'all
Yes.
have homes?
Or they bought them very quickly, sight unseen in some cases.
Probably did during the second half of COVID.
Yes.
So you got that factor going on. We have more means than we ever had. This isn't like my parents from the 70s when they were scraping to buy the first home when interest rates were like 11%. You had a wonderful period of very low interest rates and we were paying 2% or 3%, and you were making a lot more money than my
Right.
parents did when I first bought their home
Yeah, it
a long
was
time ago.
you're in more buying power, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, which means we're able to buy a second home someplace else for recreational investment, whether it be inside or outside the state. That's a factor too. And of course, people are living longer and they should, but they also want to enjoy the quality of life, which means not leaving their home until they're absolutely positive and no choice but leaving their home, which
Right.
means that it affects the housing stock. And
Yeah,
so
absolutely. Yeah.
people don't want to talk about that. One of the objectives of government is to help keep seniors in their own homes, hence the senior circus tax break, a senior circus tax breaker. Which, if you haven't applied for it, you still have 3 years to apply for it if you qualify under the age income guidelines. So, another plug for the senior circuit tax breaker that even though it's after tax season, you can amend your taxes for 3 years to get money back from Massachusetts for that benefit. So, we wouldn't have that program. It wasn't designed to try to help people stay in their homes.
Right. Yeah, absolutely.
So, you got this very contradicting situation.
I know. Yeah.
You have two public policies that are good, but creates an interesting problem because
Right.
you stay in a home, then we don't have inventory.
Actually, the governor was in Braintree this morning introducing another bill to try and streamline permitting for new housing.
Yeah, this is like the 100th time we've done this one,
I know.
okay? Let's not pretend, folks. I mean, you do this long enough, and Joe definitely has seen every news article known to man about these things. Streamlining regulations, streamlining permitting, streamlining licensing. Half the
Yes.
battle is technology to begin with. They need better tech. They're always like, oh, use technology. They need to use their own technology and realize how crappy they make technology to help customers out. I mean, I swear to God, it's like, do you people actually use this? You are the problem. You streamline it to the point that you can't even use it because you needed something out there as opposed to actually thinking about what you put out. Yeah, I'm not ranting people because I find as miserable as you guys, okay? I'm not ranting. And I don't, again, I just live here sometimes, I like to say. Secondly, you know, a lot of permitting stuff is done on a municipal level. I mean, you know, we've passed a number of state laws to try to help streamline that process. But local zoning is local zoning. There's only so much we can do. We do a lot of laws regarding zoning. So the MBTA Communities Act, we have like the Rivers Act, the Watershed Act, Title IX. We have a lot of different environmental and permitting issues and construction for safety. But at the same time, though, you know, there's only so much people can do regarding how things happen at municipal level. And we do provide money for municipal planning. I mean, Massachusetts Area Planning Council in the Greater Boston Area, quasi-state agency that helps municipalities regarding municipal planning, which can include commercial and residential development. So it isn't like there's not resources out there. It's whether or not local government, you know, has a plan. You know, master plan over X number of years, which may outlive the board of selectmen or mayor or council or town meeting member, depending what form of government you live in. But, you know, one of the challenges in democracies is the fact that you have changing leaders. And whether they leave office or get voted out, and you have a plan that's like 3 out of 10 years in, you have new leadership. Does that plan stay in place for
Starts all over again, maybe, yeah.
And we've seen that happen before. I mean, you and I have been around long enough to watch it happen over and over again, where, you know, you got a new administration decides to blow it up.
Yes. Oh, yes. There are many, many, many shelves full of plans that are collecting dust from previous administrations.
Yeah, and it's not just state, but also municipal government as well.
Sure. Absolutely. Yeah.
So, I mean, not advocating for incumbency forever. I like to keep my job, folks, I'm not gonna lie. But that being said, you know, part of it is when you elect new officials, particularly an executive branch level officials, as well as legislative branch and councils and town meeting members, you know, are you going to be able to continue the good work of the prior leadership moving forward? Or you decide you have so much change that you want to blow up a plan halfway through, and then you sit around and complain about what happened.
Yes, welcome to democracy. That's how it works.
Well, this is often criticism by the totalitarian governments against democracies. This is actually a very common argument by totalitarian governments, right?
Well, that's a, as you said, another podcast for another day because we're out of time today.
Oh, we've covered everything from conflicts around the world to interest rates to rules debate and, you know, a little peek and insight of how I run a committee.
That's right.
And the responsibilities associated with it. And again, we keep showing our age because
All right, I'm proud of it. I'm embracing it.
well, I don't know if I'm truly embracing it.
You're younger than I am, so you better start embracing it, Tacky.
Well, I got teenager interns again at Stato's.
That always ages you when you have young people around you. Yes, exactly.
It actually does. You know, I like to tell my stories. So those who know me, I like telling old Stato stories now. But when you start telling old Stato stories, it means you're old because you're telling old stories.
That's right. Yes. So let's get a hold of you so we can hear your stories.
617-722-2370. 617-722-2370. Call us. It is not my suite. I remind folks you get the automated system because the front desk is overwhelmed. And it does happen, by the way. Front desk does get overwhelmed calls. Just hit anybody in the office and we'll get the voicemail and we'll get back to you. We always prioritize constituent services first. Obviously, status is open. Please come for a tour. SCU is out in Quincy. We're in room 42. Again, if you need help with tour desk, give us a call, give us an email at Tacky Chan. Tackey dot chan at mahouse.gov, Tackey dot chan at mahouse.gov. We do prioritize constituent services first. And no joke, I had 120 emails of testifiers this morning come in, which I'm trying to soak my way through before I got on this call with you. So I am deep in hearing season. But yeah, no joke, 120 emails this morning on
Wow.
testifiers alone. So do my best to sort through my email and try to read them all. But, you know, we prioritize constituent services first. At Tacky Chan on X, State Representative Tacky Chan on Facebook. If you want to see my comings and goings, MALegislature.gov. Strongly encourage everybody again, make an account, follow bills, watch us online. And of course, TackyChan.org is the resource page and contact page again. And of course, me and Joe every week or 2 weeks. And, you know, remind folks to catch Joe and his timid Quincy update every morning.
Thank you so much, Techie. It'll probably be July next time we talk.
Yeah, are you going away next week?
I am not. I will be here in body and spirit.
Well, so I.
Okay, well, we'll talk then.
We'll talk then.
All right. Thanks very much.